May it please the court. Stephen Quam from Frederickson and Byron, appearing on behalf of the appellant in this matter, LaPlante Properties. I anticipate that the principals of LaPlante Properties, Stephen Karen LaPlante, will arrive shortly, as they anticipated that this would start at 10:40. When I was reviewing the papers again this morning, I came across a sentence in the state's brief that I think provides context about why we are here. It's on page 7, and it says this. Thus, MnDOT conveyed excess trunk highway land to a road authority pursuant to an agreement with that authority for the purpose of being used for highway purposes. Today, on that land that was conveyed, it was land that was initially condemned for a trunk highway, and as the state indicates in its brief, it was land that was conveyed to the city of Buffalo for highway purposes. There stands a Napa store. Appellant, the LaPlante Properties and the LaPlante family, the entity that owned that property before it was condemned for a highway, thinks there's something wrong with that.
Counsel, let's go back a ways. In 2003, when the condemnation proceedings occurred, it's your position that 16144 sub 2 would somehow allow your client to repossess that property. But in 2008, the state conveys property to the city of Buffalo. My question is, it seems to me when I read through this that you and your client believe the state retained some interest after conveying the property to the city of Buffalo in 2008. Is that right?
I think the statutory process, and you have to read 161.16 and 161.44 together, right?
Okay.
They have to both be considered as you analyze
this. When you reference 161.16, you're referring to subdivision 4B?
That's correct, Your okay. Honor. So if the state chooses to convey a property pursuant to 161.164B as what happened here, I don't think that property can be converted to a commercial use without following 161.44.
And the authority for that belief?
Well, the authority for it being, take a look at 161.16.
It's a statutory argument. There's no case law.
There's no case law. And you know why there's no case law? Because usually the government behaves better than this. If there are rules that require the government to convey a property, to convert it to a commercial use, the government usually follows them. Here, the government did not follow those rules, and that's why there's no case law, because this shouldn't happen. So to get to your initial question, Judge Cleary, does the state retain the right? Well, I think it has to. I think if there is a mechanism that allows the state to convert property that's condemned for right-of-way to a commercial use, it has to be followed. And if you phrase that as the state retaining those rights, that's fine. There's no question that had the state attempted to sell that directly to a private developer, it would have run through the LaPlantes. There's no reason that process should have been avoided, but that's exactly what has occurred here.
You're referencing the 2016 conveyance from the city to ENR.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But that is a different situation, is it not? I mean, I understand what your argument is, and I understand you're saying that this opens a door to the state being allowed to do this. But they did convey it to the city in 2008, and it's the city that conveyed it in 2016 to ENR. And I guess I'm still looking for language that would suggest the state retained an interest.
Well, the language, to the extent it exists, is in a proper or a broad reading of those statutes. Look, we're dealing with eminent domain here. The LaPlante family did nothing wrong whatsoever. All they did was purchase property at a good location. They kind of won the reverse lottery. So you can read those statutes to provide the state the deed itself references it's subject to all restrictions of record. You can read that deed to say that 161.44 obligation, that's a restriction of record because it was in place and it applies to the property when it was conveyed to the city in 2008.
I'd like to ask you a question about 161.44 because my question is, what is your client's interest at this point in time, given what has happened since 2003. As I read subdivision 2 of 16144, it appears that there's a remainder owned by a vendor under two circumstances. If they continue to own some part of the property on the tract, or if the lands that were originally conveyed constituted an entire tract. Which is the case here?
Latter. The entire tract was condemned in 2003. Now, a portion of the tract that was condemned is going to be put, it's characterized by the city as excess, to a commercial use. Under those circumstances, LaPlante Properties should be given the opportunity, pursuant to Subdivision 2, to repurchase that property. They're second in priority. First, the state has the opportunity to convey it to the city for a public use. Public purpose, that's subdivision one. If they choose not to do that, it goes to the prior owner if the entire parcel was condemned. And there's no dispute here, Your Honor, that the entire parcel was condemned.
So how long does this go into perpetuity?
Sure. That's the state.
What if the city 30 years from, what if they didn't transfer it to the private, to ENR in 2016, but it was 20 years down the road? This goes on forever?
Well, let's look at it. I think if we look at it from the perspective of the state, what if the state held it forever and the state decided to convey the excess property? Would the state have an obligation to try to find the LaPlante family and to sell it to them? Certainly. I mean, if the state has that obligation, I don't see what's changed if the state subdivision steps into its shoes. Really what's happening is the state could not do this in 2016 on its own. It could not sell the property to ENR for a commercial use without first offering it to the LaPlante property family, right? I mean, that's undisputed. You read the statute. The state can't do it in one step. Now, can the city do it on its own? No, the city could not condemn that land for economic redevelopment in 2016 or 2015. The statutes don't permit it. So why should our system permit the government to do in two steps what each arm could not do directly? That makes no sense to me.
But is that something for this court to decide or any court to decide, or is that something that would appropriately require a legislative response?
It's something for this court to decide, Your Honor. Given the language of the statutes that were in place, you're the only avenue to protect people like the LaPlantes. If you don't do it, nobody will. Now, in 2006...
Well, counsel, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going back to Judge Berkman's question. If there was more specific language in the statute, that could prevent exactly what you're suggesting occurred here. I guess I'm back to her question. Wouldn't that be the legislative solution rather than our somehow finding language that I don't see in the statute to stop what you want us to stop?
Is it possible that there could be a legislative solution that would clean this up? Sure. But does that prevent this court from writing what is clearly a wrong? I don't think it does. I mean, this is...
But we're an error-correcting court, though. It sounds like you're asking us to take more action than we may have power to do.
I don't believe that's the case, Your Honor.
Why not?
You have the power. The what's before you is the district court's decision granting summary judgment as a matter of law. You have the power to conclude that a private cause of action does exist for a broad violation of the process, the statutory process that is in place regarding how the government conveys property that was condemned for a highway and converts it to a commercial use. You have the power to do that. And you can declare, you can find that there is a private cause of action for the violation of those statutes, and you can remand it to the district court for further proceedings.
Does your argument depend on some sort of a factual record that the state and the city were somehow in cahoots on this way back in 2008? That they weren't, in fact, going to use this anymore other than once the Fifth Street or whatever was completed, that the city was going to allow the remaining property to be used for development, commercial development, rather than further transportation purposes?
Yeah, I've thought long and hard about that, Your Honor. In an effort to get the legal question efficiently presented to the district court, we agreed to an accelerated schedule. and the facts, which are the facts regarding how the property proceeded, provided the basis for that. Should I have deposed MnDOT and the city to determine if there was something regarding a design to kind of bait and switch? If I had to do it again, I would. That's the best answer I have. Does it depend on that record? I don't think it depends on it. Could that record be a different case for you to consider? Certainly. Did I make a mistake? I sure could have.
Put it another way, though. At least in the record before us, there's no sign of collusion, is there, in 2008?
I think there could be. There is a letter in the record from the city saying we are eager to redevelop this property. Okay? That is a thread. It's not thick, but there's a thread that says we're going to put this to a commercial use. And after that happens, the state says, I'm conveying this property to you for a highway purpose. And if the state understands that, state takes the position that once I make that conveyance, I can wash my hands. I can bury my head in the sand, and city, you can do whatever you want. Well, can you get to some sort of collusion from that?
Sir, you cannot enter the well. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Yep.
Your Honor, it's Mr. LaPlante. I really apologize.
I understand that. You may, not a problem. You may take a seat back there. Thank you.
Yeah. Is there a thread? Yes. We want to use it for a commercial purpose. So what do? They convey it pursuant to 161.16, which does not allow a commercial purpose. Yeah, there's enough there. There's enough there to send it back to the district court to consider whether this Karen and Steve LaPlante have a remedy for what's clearly wrong. I think context, you know, they're good lawyers. There's no question about it. And what they're focusing on is, here's why the LaPlantes can't go forward with claims, right? They attack the claims, and they put the focus on the LaPlante family. Now, this is a family that got their land condemned who just wants to say, well, I thought I had the right to repurchase it before it was put to a commercial use, right? I think you should focus on their explanation. What kind of justification have the city or the state provided for this conduct? Let's start with the city. What's the city say? Well, the city says 161.16 is silent regarding what we do with excess property. Therefore, we can sell whatever we want. A couple problems with that. 161.16 isn't silent. It says the consideration for this conveyance, which is with no money consideration, the city didn't pay the state a cent for this. Consideration is for contributing this to the public highway system. Yeah, well, it's part of the public highway system. When it's part of the public highway system, you don't get to just sell it for a commercial use. I mean, if that's the case, the city could just declare any road access and sell it. That makes no sense at all. Second, what they do is they say, well, we're dealing with excess property and it doesn't provide any guidance. Look, this is a simple solution. If you look at the city's brief, page 7, there's a map, the part that's needed for the road and the part that's not. You could have accomplished this simply. Complete that split just as it's designed on page 7. 161.16 for the road, 161.44 for the part that's going to be commercially developed. City has no explanation. They just did it because they wanted to develop this piece commercially. What's the state say? Well, the state says two things. First, the conveyance was actually 161.44 as well as 161.66. We complied with both statutes, but we've done nothing wrong.
Well, and anything we did was a long time ago.
Yeah,
more than six years ago.
That doesn't go to the justification so much as to why the LaPlantes can't bring a claim. I'm focused on the justification here, Your Honor. And when I get there, it's not 161.44. The deed says it. The district court said it. Their interrogatory said it. That argument doesn't fly. Their second argument is, well, why should we be forced to monitor property we conveyed? It's just too hard. I think, where are they? Karen and Steve deserve better than that. Yeah, it may be hard, but there's a process designed to protect people like them. And once the state finds out that the city is ignoring the restrictions, the statutory restrictions that are on the property pursuant to a conveyance, the state should do something about it.
And when did they find out?
16 at the latest. They may have found out 17 when I sent the letter. I'm sorry, my time's up. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. And you'll have 5 minutes. Did you finish your answer to the question?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. Thanks.
And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
And good morning, Your Honors and Counsel. May it please the Court, William Young, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the State of Minnesota. I spoke with Counsel Mr. Thompson to my left here, and we're going to divide the time. I'm going to take a little bit of it, and he's probably going to take the majority of our time.
Okay, so how much time are you going to take so we can set the clock?
Probably 5 minutes at most.
Okay, so you'll have 5 minutes, and your colleague will have 10 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, again, may it please the Court. I would like to first begin by responding to a couple of the questions that were asked by the panel here of Mr. Quam. And I would note, first of all, Judge Cleary, you had asked about what interests remained with the state after the 2008 conveyance. I would note on page 11 of the addendum attached with the appellant, the only interest the state still has is the right to restrict access to Trunk Highway 55 from the property. That's the only right that at all that was retained during the conveyance. Another question that was asked, there's a question as to whether there's any showing of the state and the city being in cahoots as to this transaction being just a pass-through. And the record reflects that this transaction was done for highway purposes, also for public purposes. Again,
which transaction? The 2003?
The 2008 transaction,
okay,
involving MnDOT. Because Fifth Street remains on the northern half of the property. And then if you look on page 6 of the brief filed by the state, there's a map from when they were requesting bids. It shows the driveway that bisects the property that was providing access to the parcel just to the south, that but for that driveway would have been landlocked at the time of the condemnation action. Under the Kettleson case by the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2011, providing access to an otherwise landlocked property is a highway purpose that the state can use condemnation for. And so that driveway remained up until this whole development with Napa 8 years later. So when the state made the transaction, it absolutely was for highway purpose for the entirety of the condemnation, of the entirety of the parcel that was condemned. Jumping back now to the transaction as a whole, or the two transactions as a whole, I would note the condemnation in 2003 by MnDOT occurred obviously before the 2006 statutory changes that were enacted by the legislature post the Kelo versus City of New London case at the U.S. Supreme Court, which restricted the public purposes. But in that statutory enactment, it says that this only applies to condemnations commenced on or after the date following the enactment, which was May 19th, 2006. So the narrower public purpose restriction that now exists in the statute doesn't even apply to this 2003 condemnation. So,
but doesn't the district court sitting in equity have the ability to honor the LaPlante's interests in this property, even though I understand the law is different now than it was back in 2003?
The district court may interpret these transactions and the statutes to afford the LaPlante's whatever rights they are entitled to, but their property was entirely condemned at the time. The transaction from MnDOT to the city in 2008 doesn't reference the LaPlante's in any way, shape, or form, doesn't provide them any rights in any way, shape, or form. And so, therefore, the LaPlante's gained no rights in a 2008 conveyance to which they are not a party to and are not referenced. They didn't somehow become a 30-party beneficiary of that quitclaim deed from the city or from the state to the city.
But didn't the city get bigger rights than it was given? I mean, the conveyance was for transport for highway purposes, and the city turned around and used it for something completely different.
Again, after the initial conveyance, it was used for highway purposes for a long period of time. This was not a pass-through where it went to the city and the next day they were soliciting deeds.
No, I know. They worked on Fifth Street, and I understand the facts.
And it goes back to your question that you asked Mr. Quam, and to which I don't know if there's really a good answer, which is how long does this go into perpetuity as to when any sort of reversionary interest comes into effect. I believe the legislature is the proper place to draw these lines, and there doesn't seem to be any line drawn by the legislature that provides the plaintiffs with the right here to make this claim. Absent that, I'm not sure how they can come up with an additional claim that just doesn't seem to be justified by the statutory scheme that was in place. Let me just review, see if I have any other notes I wanted to add. Are there any questions from your honors?
Yeah, I have a question. So you talked about how in early 2008, the transaction was indeed for a highway purpose, but doesn't that apply through the entire life of it? And why is building a commercial property, how is that furthering the highway purpose?
At the time of the transaction, it was for a highway purpose. When MnDOT, the state of Minnesota, conveys these entities to the municipalities and local entities throughout the state, there's probably an understanding that at some point in the future, again, not knowing how far into perpetuity it goes, it may be used at some point down the road for a different use. And it's just, I don't know where the line would be drawn to force MnDOT to go back retroactively and to monitor every one of these properties they've subsequently conveyed years into the future. I seem out of my time. I don't know if you have a follow-up question about that or if I answered it satisfactorily. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
May it please the Court and Council, my name is James Thompson with Kennedy and Graven. I'm appearing on behalf of the City of Buffalo and E&R Investments. Your Honor, the broad brush that appellants are taking in this case is completely highlighted by counsel's statement before this court and his opening argument. Quote, something was wrong. Quote, the government didn't follow. It's some big, broad brush that he cobbles two statutes together and tries to come up with a conclusion that neither statute supports. Quickly on the facts, this conveyance to the city in 2008 was part of a larger, it wasn't the only parcel, it was part of all the remnants that were left over after the highway construction project, okay. 8 years later, the city sells a portion of this property, obtains a title commitment that tells the city they own it in fee simple absolute title. That's what the title commitment said.
Council, let me go back a minute. Back to 2008, I take it everyone's in agreement that the state didn't have the authority to convey that for commercial purposes.
That's correct. They had the authority to convey it for public purpose under 4.44, which they would have had to offer the previous property owner, the ability to buy it at fair market value.
Well, the underlying argument here, and it permeates the briefs and argument, is that there's an inequity here in the sense that the city can be, the state can use the city or another subdivision of some sort to insulate itself from an improper commercial conveyance, give it to the city and the city can do it and there's no statutory remedy. Your comment on that?
Your Honor, my comment on that is there was absolutely no facts to support that argument in this case. There's no evidence of collusion. This was like...
no, I'm not suggesting there is. Would you agree the statutory scheme allows that?
Allows what, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
Allows this kind of insulation? In other words, the state can't do it, but the state gives it to a city or another subdivision, they can do it.
Yeah, if the motive of the state and the city was to circumvent the right under 0.44 that the previous property owner has an ability to buy property at a fair market value, that would be an issue. I understand that. But here, the state conveyed it pursuant to a statute they have the authority to convey it. The city used almost half of the property for right-of-way purposes. As a matter of fact, the right-of-way, Fifth Street, was part of this project. They had a remnant left over. They have the ability under their normal general rules, statutes, to convey real property. If anyone had a right to object to that, it would be the state, not the LaPlantes. Is this a restriction? Is it a right of reverter? Is it just a precatory statement that you use it for highway purpose? What is it? Whatever it is, it doesn't inure to the benefit of the LaPlantes.
Is there any mechanism under any statute by which a city would, 8 years after receiving being a conveyance under 161, 0.16, give the state notice that it was going to be doing something with the property it obtained?
I'm sorry, is there any statute
that... Yeah, is there anything that requires a city to go back to the state 8 years later and say, oh, yeah, we didn't need all the property that you conveyed to us, and now we're going to sell it to a commercial entity?
There's nothing that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Now, in addition, your court asked a question earlier about did they wait too long. The two main cases that both parties have cited have the Webb case and the Buck case, okay? Both of those are injunction actions. Both of those are equitable actions. And in an equitable, had the LaPlante's soon enough brought an equitable action to restrain the conveyance, you know, I still don't think they'd succeed because there was nothing violated. But we just don't think there's any redressability issue here, vis-a-vis the LaPlante's and the city or ENR investments. And this action was not an equitable action. It's a monetary damages action. The court probably concluded that there was no statutory authority for the LaPlante's argument. And I admire their creativity in trying to put two statutes together, get to a conclusion, and say something went wrong here, keeping in mind that, number one, they were paid full compensation for the taking in the first place. And number two, the only right, arguably, they had under 0.44, had this been a 0.44 statute, is the opportunity to buy the property back at fair market value.
And that's an opportunity 16144 affords people even after they've received fair compensation for the original condemnation.
That's correct. So had this been a 0.44 transfer and had the state offered it back to them, they could have purchased it for fair market value. That's correct, Your Honor.
So, counsel, I just want to go back, and maybe I'm reiterating or repeating something that has been discussed already, but if the state had retained the property, had not transferred it to the city, the state would not have been able to use it for anything other than a highway purpose, right?
If they had retained it and never conveyed it back to the city, I'll defer a little bit to the state on this, but my understanding is they could only use it for the purpose for which it was condemned, and I think that was for highway purposes. Now, they could have, 20 years later, conveyed it under 0.44 for development, for public purpose. Again, they could have done the same thing they did here 20 years later.
But that would be limited for a public purpose.
Your Honor, if it was 20 years later and let's say another city needed the remnant for highway purposes, I think the state could still convey it for highway purposes.
Right.
I
agree with you there. Right. But yeah. It's limited either to highway purpose or public purpose, not a commercial
purpose. Well, you know, the question is, what does public purpose mean? In redevelopment of property, and the state has argued this, is, we believe, a public purpose. Redevelopment of property under economic development statutes has clearly been held to be a public purposes in some situations. It's not a public purpose for taking law anymore, but it is still a public purpose that cities and EDAs can spend public funds for to redevelop property. So I would contend it is a public purpose to convey it to a governmental entity and then let it be redeveloped. It, quite frankly, it happens all the time when the state has excess right-of-way that they use for their project. It gets conveyed to the government, and oftentimes it's reconveyed to a developer for redevelopment purposes or economic development purposes, which we believe is a public purpose.
But at any event, they would have had to provide the LaPlante's with an opportunity as the holders of the land, the vendor, if you will, they would have had to, if the state were the actor in 2016, have given LaPlante's the opportunity to purchase.
Yeah, in 2016, yeah. If they, instead of conveying it to this...
Well, if the state had owned it and in 2016 wanted to convey it for commercial development to somebody else, they would have had to give the LaPlante's the first opportunity.
Your Honor, I don't believe the state has the authority, and I have to defer to counsel on this, to convey it to a private party. They can only convey it to a public entity for public purposes, and then the public is redevelopment.
Your argument was that redevelopment is a public
purpose.
That's
correct, Your Honor.
And LaPlante's apparently wanted it to redevelop it for commercial purposes also, and they would have had the first shot at that.
That's correct, Your Honor, if I did that. Your Honor, counsel also contended that there possibly are issues of fact here that the court should remand. I remind the court that this case is before the court on cross motions for summary judgment before the trial court. Both parties agreed there were no disputed issues of material fact, and therefore that's how it was presented to the court. And I think it's too late now to contend that there are issues of fact. In conclusion, then, Your Honor, Your Honors, if anything, I think the court has hit the nail somewhat on the head here, is that if there's the city and the state followed every statute, every provision they were obligated to, if the appellant doesn't feel that was fair or doesn't like the outcome, the remedy here is a legislative remedy. It is there were no errors committed by the trial court in his decision on this case, and we therefore request that the trial court's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to start with where Mr. Thompson left off. The state and the city followed every statutory requirement. Well, let's go back to the beginning. This property was conveyed by the state to the city pursuant to 16116 subdivision 4B. That required the city to contribute the property it received to the state public highway system. When property is part of the public highway system, it's used for roads. It can't be sold. Now, you can vacate roads, and you can sell the property pursuant to the vacation process. That would be following the process that applies to the government here. To say that we can receive property for a highway and the next day sell it to a private developer to build a Napa store on it is consistent with the statutory process, I think, is infirm. Second point. There was an implication that the city waited 8 years to try to develop this commercial property. The record demonstrates otherwise. The affidavit of Merton Auger, which is in the record, I can't find the document number and I apologize, discusses an effort to sell that property to the car dealer Morey's in 2009. So yes, the city, after it contributed the property it received to the public highway system, within months was trying to develop the public highway for a commercial use. The hypothetical and the absurd, you can tend to frame an analysis by taking somewhat absurd hypotheticals, but what the state and the city are saying is entirely proper to use 161.16, entirely proper for the city to accept it and to pay the state nothing, entirely proper to contribute that property to the state highway system, and entirely proper to ignore all those obligations and to sell at DNR. Process and equity don't justify and don't support that conduct. Now, Mr. Thompson gave me a little credit for being creative, but it's not creative. What we're dealing with here is, should the state follow its rules? And all of their argument is pointing to us. They didn't do this right. They didn't do that right. You know what? They did nothing wrong. But the people who have done wrong here and the people who have ignored the obligations that are set out for the statute, people, they're not the people, it's entities. It's the government. And does equity reach that, Judge Barkman? It should. Yeah, this is not fit neatly into an established cause of action. I admit that. But that doesn't mean that the claims don't have merit. And that doesn't mean that equity cannot redress the wrong that occurred here. You got that power, and I really hope you use it. And I respectfully request that you send this matter back. You reverse, and you remand to Judge Halsey. And we can get the LaPlante treated fairly, because what's happened here isn't. If you have any questions, I'll answer them. Otherwise, I thank you for your time.
No, we do.
Thanks.
Not.
Thanks.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for the oral arguments. Very well done, and the briefing as well. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame.
Thank you.
That is our last case on the oral calendar, and we have three non-oral cases. With that, court is in recess. Thank you.